Keep the frequency clear.
But guess what? You don't get to tell me when I can stop speaking. Well,
tune in to Queering the Air.
Report on trans and intersex issues with accuracy, dignity, and respect.
Yes, ma'am.
Change the narrative rather than combat the narrative.
Yes, queen.
I know who I am. Took me 20 years to get here. I'm not going to let some idiot senator destroy that.
3CR Community Radio.
Our stories are best told when we are the ones telling them. It helps combat the perpetuation of stereotypes, misinformation, and lies.
The TGDNB culture is valid, critical, vital, and vibrant.
I discovered in the face of overwhelming prejudice and persecution an incredible strength through being fiercely fabulous.
Welcome to Queering the Air, Sundays from 3 to 4 on 3CR. 3CR is proud to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, traditional owners of the land from which we transmit people-powered radio.
Welcome on, welcome.
Always was, always will be, Aboriginal land.
Indeed, I started a little early there. I'm a little too keen today, for there is actually quite a bit to get through. And indeed, we will not be having our session meow, 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 which is sad because I love to stim to the intro. And in fact, I might just play it at some point just so I can stim to it, although we're not going to talk today about community events. So what we've got on today is an interview that was meant to be, to begin with, our good friend Oscar Donoghue, debriefing us as to their experience in going to two annual general meetings of queer organisations. So it was just a bit, wasn't really meant to be about comparisons. It was basically intended to just be a discussion about the importance of corporate governance from the perspective of ordinary organisational members like ourselves and benefactors like ourselves. And so therefore maybe a little bit of talk about perhaps the importance of joining, you know, being members of some of these organisations, perhaps even talk about, you know, the importance of some of us standing up and being part of boards and, you know, and getting engaged in some of this. As boring as it can be also important work. It turned out to be something very, very different. And I won't explain why, because what I'm going to play is a pre-recorded interview, or basically debrief, between me and Oscar about the experiences that he had. And also, then we'll speak after that with Anna. Now, Anna, when Oscar is mentioning the fact that he was at these AGMs with a friend, it's actually with the lovely Anna. So Anna, I'll get you to introduce yourself, name and pronouns, although I've already done the name.
Hi, it's Anna here. I go by she, her.
Excellent, yeah. Excellent. Anything else you'd like to say about yourself?
I've been like a recipient of help from these organizations and stuff, so I'm keen to, you know, talk about how we can make things better with this stuff as well.
Agreed. You know, yeah. It's not going to be a complete Debbie Downer, but unfortunately what we've uncovered isn't great. Mm-hmm. And it does fall into the broader category of what, in fact, only the previous week Oscar and myself were talking about. That is the growing concern, valid concern, about an emerging queer elite that may well, unfortunately, be doing much within their organisations to attempt to appease certain elements of the broader community in a way that is often colloquially called within the trans community as throwing us under the bus. Mm-hmm. So, without further ado, I'm going to let myself and Oscar explain things away by way of the pre-recorded debrief. Here we go. All right, so.
So.
What's the go?
Let me tell you about a thing.
Yes.
So I went to two annual general meetings.
Congratulations.
Thank you. They were both my second and third AGMs of all time that I've ever attended.
As the famous nappy ad goes, I'm a big boy now.
Yes. Thank you.
You're most welcome.
So I went to, on Saturday, Switchboard had their AGM.
Yes.
Like, I find that whole process so strange.
Due diligence, baby.
Yeah. Yep. Due diligence.
Oh, yeah. Corporate governance.
Yeah, we love some corporate governance.
Through assurance of corporate governance through good systems and processes.
Yes. When you put it like that,
yeah.
Fine.
Yeah, yeah. It's fine. Yes.
But.
Well, you know, in reality, if they don't at least go through the motions of doing all that, the integrity of their organizational structures in question, when compared to certain benchmarks and standards and that are more often than not mandated through one piece of legislation or one, you know, grant set of grant rules, you know. If you're not up to those standards, you can no longer trade.
Yeah, you have to go through the formalities of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you lack operational integrity.
Yes. So I went to the operational integrity meetings for Switchboard and for Thorn Harbor.
Well, to be clear, in this case, you went to AGMs.
Well, AGMs so they part
were the,
of.
They were the corporate... They were the part of the corporate governance. It's a higher level, a loftier, more utopian level.
Sure.
Yeah, as in, hang on. Ah, AGM. You know, like that.
Beautiful.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Yes. So I did that.
Yes.
And it's really interesting to compare the two. For me, anyway.
Of the two separate AGMs.
The Switchboard and the Thorn Harbor AGM, they're very different.
Yes.
In ways that I hadn't really expected.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to tell this all out of order.
Yep.
The vibes. We left the Thorn Harbor AGM because the vibes were off. It felt like a hostile place to be. For my friend, this isn't something that I brought to the table.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just felt quite hostile. We didn't stay for the whole thing, and also there was no purpose to stay for the whole thing because they don't do their elections on the day.
Yeah.
They're all ballot, like, done beforehand via, like, postal ballot.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was quite a strange thing. There are lovely people in Thorn Harbor who came up and said, like, hello to me the people who recognized me.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a mission statement that would... That naturally attracts people other than those who give a toss, right?
Yeah.
That's the thing. So, yeah. And then from there, though, there can be different ways in which people display that.
Mm.
Do you think that's fair?
I think that's fair. Yes.
Yeah.
That is fair.
Yes. I don't suspect anyone gets involved in an organization like that unless they do give a toss. So, but, you know, but that's the base. That's the basics, right?
Yeah, giving a toss.
Yeah. That's the base level. That's the base level. And then from there springs forth the wonderful diversity that is organizational life.
Yes.
Including the type of behaviors that one can see on a personal, team, and organizational level.
Yeah, I felt like it really said a lot about the organization. So the Switchboard meeting was at the Victorian Pride Centre in their lovely little fit theatreette.
Yes.
There was a little spread. There was delicious food, which I know you care a lot about.
I do. So that people were well catered for?
Well catered.
Good.
No alcohol at Switchboard, unlike Thorn Harbor.
What?
Yeah, Thorn Harbor had alcohol at the AGM.
At the AGM?
Yeah.
Oh.
So that is strange, right? Is it? I felt that was kind of strange. My friend who I went with.
I don't know if it's wrong, but it is strange, I think. Yeah. Is strange wrong? No, not necessarily. But you said that and it immediately struck me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, did you get the impression they were just trying to jazz it up a bit?
I got the impression that they're really going through a difficult time.
Oh my God, it's the AGM. Let's hit the booze.
Well, I went to the AGM last year as well, and the difference between those, just the Thorn Harbor AGMs is very different.
Oh, okay.
So not well catered this year. It felt like more of a soiree last year. And yeah. I know that all of the alcohol that we've been discussing was donated.
Yeah, because they've lost a lot of funding, haven't they?
They have lost heaps of funding.
Yeah,
lots of cuts. And so has Switchboard. They've had to reduce their services as well.
Yeah. But let me be clear here with you. Thorn Harbor did not cater well for their people who attended.
Correct.
Boo. Boo. Big thumbs down.
The other thing that was stark to me was the keynote speakers.
Yes.
For Switchboard, it was Brian Stevens, an elected member of the First People's Assembly of Victoria.
Right.
Talking about the treaty and the structure of the treaty and how we can support its implementation. And, you know, it was a platform that was given to a very contemporary cause.
Yes.
And at Thorn Harbour, it was Ian Hunter, who's a politician from South Australia. I think the first elected, like, openly gay elected member of parliament.
Right.
And
what party?
Let me look so you can dish.
Yeah, that's funny. Let's go. Families First or something.
Oh, where are we? Oh. There he is. Ian Keith Hunter is an Australian politician representing South Australian branch of the Australian Labor Party.
Oh, he's from the ALP.
Since 2006, I'm sorry.
Oh, there you go.
Yes.
And what did he say?
He said that to make change, you need to make people like you.
Oh, my God. Hey, if we make people like us, then we could be better together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right.
So his speech was kind of a history of his involvement in the AIDS, HIV campaigns and response.
Sure.
The thing that he said himself was the key takeaway from the speech that he had given was that in order to make change and to get what you want, you have to make people like you and take them along on that journey.
Right.
And then, you know, if they like you, then you can push a little more and push a little more. So you have to kind of placate those in power.
Right.
Another thing that kind of weirded me out was, introduced him.
Yes.
And as went back to her seat and he came onto the stage, they stopped and he was like pointing to his cheek being like, give me a kiss, and she gave him a kiss, and then when he got on stage he was like, I can do that now because I'm not her boss. I can kiss her now because I'm not her boss.
Yucky poos.
It was gross.
Right.
It gave me, it's like, yeah, hell yeah, like, congrats on being openly gay and having done the work that you've done, but it felt so tone deaf to the current climate.
Yes. Can we elaborate what was said around? So what were there examples of what would not be getting people to like you? What sort of things would result in you not being liked, according to his speech?
I don't recall any specifics. It was...
Yeah, okay, so unspoken. Unspoken things.
Yeah.
That's fun. Well, I think that's telling.
Mm.
You know, I mean, if it's unspoken, then I think that one is entitled to look around at the current external operating environment of these organisations and ask, what are the key pressure points in terms of organisations either being liked or not being liked?
Yes.
You know, if one does not want that extrapolation, one needs to specify. If one doesn't specify, then they have either advertently or inadvertently, in this particular case, suggested that Thorn Harbour Health could benefit from not being so supportive of genderqueer people, for instance, right? Because what else are we talking about here? You know? And that's a genuine question. What else? You were there.
I was.
So what else are we talking about here?
Well, he was talking about it he was like, most of his presentation was about his history and how he has sort of changed the needle.
Yeah. Sure.
And how, yeah, how he had done that was
getting people to like him.
Getting people to like him. And doing.
Did he specify how he got people to like him? Because I don't like him.
It was, from my impression, it was kind of a pretend to be who you think they like.
Yeah, okay.
You know,
all right,
who
so,
you think they need you to be in order to make
okay.
change.
So mirror what it is that those you wish to influence want you to be.
Yeah.
So that they like you. And then therefore, as a result of having achieved that, you will then be effective in achieving your other goals. Is that correct? Is that a fair...
I think that's a fair...
That's not hyperbole?
I don't think that's hyperbole. I think it was like quite, placate people, get them to like you by being, I don't know.
Okay, so, you know, and the reason why I ask these questions is because in philosophy, for instance, one sort of tries to distill, you know, these ideas. So it would be something like, Thorn Harbor Health will be successful if and only if it models itself on what its, say, donor base and its potential strategic partners want them to be, so that therefore they then attract whatever it is that's required. I don't know if he specified resources, in order to then be able to deliver on the secondary goals. The primary goal ends up being pleasing to your prospective strategic partners.
Absolutely, I would say that's the primary goal that was being advocated for.
The primary goal was to be pleasing to strategic partners.
Yes.
Okay, that is no different to what Matt Beard said at the Better Together conference, except he had the guts to specify. Well, this is the problem, isn't it? When people don't specify, when they just throw open a statement and say, oh, you know, you need to be more appealing to your prospective donor and strategic partnership base. And the way to do that is to mirror what it is that they're wanting to see in you. It is not at all unfair to state that that framework actively excludes strongly advocating for those elements of the queer community that broad supporter base, prospective supporter base, won't necessarily like because they're a bit icky.
Yeah, that's the impression that I got.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's me.
Yeah, and it's me.
Right. Unless you've got the complete wrong end of the stick, and I doubt it, I personally doubt it, that's what the speech was about.
Yeah. And it was really disheartening because I did feel those echoes of the Better Together, Matt Beard, what hills should we die on argument.
Right.
What hills are worth dying on.
Right.
Rather, is the episode title of that podcast.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the message. So Matt Beard's message was, you know, at the Better Together conference, or at the, you know, he was going to repeat it at the conference, right, but didn't manage to. Quite rightly, but did say in that podcast leading up to the Better Together conference that it's important at this particular point in time for the queer community to make hard decisions around what it is that they will actively advocate for, because otherwise the movement is going to lose out.
Yeah.
And unlike our friend at the Thorn Harbor Health AGM, he then went on to specify what those were, and they were all TERF talking points. Mm-hmm. So hats off to him. He was actually clear about what he was talking about. Now we're talking about the AGM featuring a guest speaker who said exactly the same logical framework, that in order to meet your aims, you need to behave and appear in a way that reflects the expectations of your prospective sponsors, donors, and strategic partners. And the rest was left unsaid. Oh, gee, I wonder what he was talking about, Oscar.
I don't want to say.
But, let's think. What are the elements of the queer community that the broad collection of prospective sponsors and strategic partners find icky?
Mm.
You know, sex workers.
Well, that's what made it particularly disgusting to me was this repetition, even if it was, we've made a boo-boo, oopsie daisies.
Yeah.
Like, it was so thoughtless. And
So, you know, we're talking sex workers. We're talking, trans people who don't, you know, particularly those who don't pass, for instance, or those who are, quite intentionally genderqueer, including those that engage in, trying to make this radio-friendly, gender effery, right? You know, people who are radical queers in one form or another. I'm looking at you, Oscar, and you're looking at me, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, the people who aren't the good ones.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, this all comes down to gut feel and the feeling, the experience that I had in the room.
Yeah.
Having the context that I have and having been, you know, part of the conversation with what has been going on in these sort of trans inclusive organizations.
Yeah, inverted commas.
Yeah. This conversation, like, this was a big deal. And if they're not across that, like, they've made it blatant about which side that they're on if we're taking sides. It's...
Yeah.
So we didn't get to see who actually got elected to the board.
Why?
Because that was gross.
Oh, because you left.
Because we left. Because the impact that made on me and my transgender friend was disgusting.
Yeah.
To me, for the context that I had with the podcast and Better Together stuff, like that's why it hit me. My friend was not aware of that stuff.
Yeah.
She felt like it was a hostile environment, unwelcoming environment.
Right. Because of what had been said.
Because of what had been said.
Yeah, so this isn't just your impression.
And also the contrast between when we went to the Switchboard AGM and everyone was like, oh, volunteers are here. There are people who aren't, you know, on the board, in management.
Yeah.
Heaps of people came up and were, like, so friendly and so excited for us to be there and to be part of the conversation.
Yeah.
And that was just in, like, such stark contrast going into the Thorn Harbour AGM, where it was like, oh, we shouldn't be here. We've come into the gentleman's club and, like...
Yeah, that was the feel? Yeah.
Yeah. It felt gross.
Wow. Okay.
Which is, like, such a shame. Like, the work Thorn Harbour does is, like, great, lovely. We need rapid testing and, you know, gender-affirming care providers and...
Well, you know, not only colleagues, but friends of mine work there, and I love the work they do.
Yeah, like, there are really spectacular people who work there.
Yeah, I'm one of them.
And...
But I am troubled.
Well, it reminded me of the conversation that we had around the Better Together conference, where you very rightly made the point of, are these the people that we want to be leading these spaces?
Yes.
Because I didn't feel represented at all in that room.
I think Switchboard got it right too, by the sounds of it, because, you know, the plenary discussion in an AGM is often a great opportunity to discuss a broader principle that underpins. So with an organisation like them, you know, to talk about, a broader underlying principle of First Nations justice, first person's justice, I think is a good choice.
It gave me, like, it was solidarity.
Yes.
It was a corporate demonstration of solidarity.
Yeah. Oh, well. What can I say? I sometimes think that fascism is a bit like a duck.
Tell me more.
You look at it and you don't see much, but underneath in the water, those legs are a-spinning. and much is happening. These people have been keeping themselves very, very busy. You know, and they are starting to scare the organizations that are there to support us.
Yeah.
There are therefore conversations that are starting to occur about what hills to die on. It starts with not fascism, let's be clear. I'm talking about the reaction to that sort of behaviour, including a shift to the right, generally in Australian politics, is often reacted to by organisations that are there to look after us. We've cautioned around, for instance, you know, what it is that we might have to do, or more to the fact that there are things that we're going to have to do to change the way we behave to appeal to this environment. Well, didn't need to have that conversation last year. That didn't feature in the AGM in 2024 or 2023, right?
No.
Right? So, you know, 2025, headline speaker. So I'm not saying, you know, these organisations are turning fascist. I mean, complete, you know, utter nonsense. But that's not how fascism becomes dangerous for, you know, the trans community. The danger starts because of the reaction from those organisations that should be protecting and serving us, how they respond to this. Firstly, the menaces, the violent menaces that do exist out there, like, you know, people like the NSN who go and smash in windows, resulting in certain organisations who used to have their doors open now only taking people by appointment only.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm just saying that's a reaction, right? That reduces the service level. Not saying it's unnecessary, but I'm also not saying it's necessary. I think there might be alternatives. But anyway, another thing is, you know, boards start having conversations about what conversations they're going to continue with and about the need to appease people. In fact, they select head speakers to talk to that very point. Now, when you select a head speaker for an AGM, you know, let me tell you, as an old warhorse when it comes to corporate governance, you choose a topic that is considered by you, right, as say perhaps the secretary. I'm not saying the secretary necessarily selected it in this case, but when I've been secretary, right, for a board, and I've been secretary for a few of them, I would select a topic that was seen as a strategic imperative for the organisation. So it's a bit like, you know, choices made in film. You are allowed, I mean, the deliberate nature of choices made in filmmaking, you know, is so great that intellectually you're allowed to get away with the assumption that everything was intended by the director. Because, you know, the intention is that strong. And the extent to which a film is created is that closely edited and orchestrated, right? AGMs are the same, even the sloppy ones. You know, you're choosing the head speaker because it's a strategic imperative. So what was the strategic imperative faced by Thorn Harbour Health? To make clear to the board and other participants of the AGM the importance of carefully selecting how we look to people. Well, why was that an important discussion to have in 2025? The mind boggles. Why would a queer organisation feel the need to have that conversation as a headline topic at their AGM? That's my point. It's not just, you know, some offhanded comment that you heard from a board member. This was the strategically chosen topic for the headline speaker of the 2025 Thorn Harbour Health AGM. How we can appear more appealing to people. And when you think about the queer community in all of its diversity, that kind of talk always goes one way. It involves throwing people under a bus.
I feel like you've revealed a horrible, horrible reality to me just now. Because you're not wrong.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I've just, you know, certainly not with any pride that I talk in terms of the extent to which I've been involved in things like corporate governance, you know, but, you know, I do have that background. And so, you know, maybe I can shed a bit of light, you know, with that sort of context.
Something that I don't understand is if these community-led organizations are so led by community, why aren't they taking pains to make sure community are involved in board elections and annual meetings and, like, where's the organization?
Well, I think that, you know, the answer to that is that, like I've said, I think there is the there's becoming a maturation of a queer elite. And these are not necessarily, you know, the thing is, you know, Karl Marx didn't necessarily think, you know, that capitalists were naturally evil people. Yeah, he didn't. He didn't. He knew many of them, spoke with many of them. Right? Anybody who actually knew the history of Marx as a person would know that, you know, he just saw this as inevitable aspects of the system. Right? He didn't like very much, you know, people like factory owners who would hoard wealth, you know, and, you know, and rip off, you know, the government by being subsidized because they were delivering some kind of education to the working children, you know, so he'd write reports about that sort of stuff, you know, people who were completely taking the mickey, you know, he had a lot of, you know, choice words for. But ultimately, his point was that we lived in a system that results in people behaving in certain ways. And, you know, I'll say it's a paraphrase because I'm pretty sure I'm not going to be able to quote the best English translation perfectly. But, you know, they do not know what they do, but they nonetheless do it.
Mm-hmm.
The system of money and the motive of profit drives the whole society in particular directions. And I think that it has, slowly but surely, over the course of the last two decades, done so to the queer community. We now have an echelon of professional elites that are within the community who are part of the community, but their role is not to behave like it. And I do think that they see themselves as being necessarily distant from that community in the way that they behave and the way in which they operate in order to, just like this presenter said, be seen as a viable proposition on the part of gatekeepers in terms of policy and government funding especially, and the occasional corporate sponsor. And you're not going to be able to do that effectively and behave and speak like me, for instance. And I know that because I speak far more freely now that I no longer have that sort of work.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. You really hurt my feelings, Madison.
Why?
You told me truths that sting.
Yeah, well.
And thank you for that.
You're most welcome. And now, drift to sleep. Drift to sleep.
Yay, it's over. A light coma for me, thanks.
We'll be back after these messages.
Panoply, panorama, panpipe, pansy. Aha, pansexual, knowing no boundaries of sex or gender. Sound interesting? Then join Sally on Sundays at noon for Out of the Pan. All those gender questions making you think too hard? Whether it's transgender, bisexual, polyamorous or beyond, we'll throw those questions into the pan and cook up the answers for you. So go on, push that gender envelope, only on 3CR 855am digital and 3cr.org.au.
You're listening to 3CR, an apartheid-free zone. 3CR's Committee of Management has passed a declaration formalising our commitment to a free Palestine. As an apartheid-free zone, we're committed to boycotting Israel's regime of oppression We stand firmly against apartheid in Palestine and encourage other organisations to join us in this struggle. Visit our website to read the full declaration and learn more about our commitment to justice and liberation for Palestine and the Apartheid Free Zone movement.
Well, I now have the joy of talking with Anna about a subject that gives me no joy. Before that, I'll just sign in that you're on listening to Queering the Air on 3CR 855 AM on the radio dial, also available on digital radio and online through 3cr.org.au/streaming. And Queering the Air is also available via podcast on the 3cr.org.au/Queering the Air page. Welcome, Anna.
Hi. Hello.
How are we?
I'm doing good. And you?
Yeah, good. And we've just been sort of sitting and listening and taking in. I've had a few opportunities to do so because firstly I had to edit. That was actually a one-hour conversation, but I think we managed to distill, you know, the key aspects. So it didn't turn out to be at all as intended.
No, it didn't.
It was an intention to go to two AGMs and not even make comparisons, just talk in terms of perhaps, you know, depending on Oscar's findings, you know, that perhaps, you know, these are important events in our community. If so, how? If we should participate more in them, how and why? And just reflect on them, as we do in so many other topics, on, you know, what this means for queer culture and community, which is the remit of the show. And unfortunately, what both Oscar and yourself encountered necessitated that we reshape the brief.
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
It was certainly an interesting time. It was, because I've been to a few AGMs before, a couple for NGOs, a couple for, like, you know, private organizations and things.
Yeah, my commiserations.
Yeah. Thank you, yes. Mm. This certainly was not like most AGMs I'd ever been to. It was a very different, like, sort of vibe and stuff. It was very much a lecture, let's put it that way. Like, it felt very much like a sort of almost a scolding to the community or things and stuff. And
so are you talking specifically about the key speaker, or you also got that vibe from other proceedings like the financial report and chairperson's report, etc.?
I think definitely the key speaker solidified that.
Yeah.
But overall, the vibe was, like, definitely very hostile. Like, the financial report was very scant and stuff compared to other financial reports I've read before and stuff. And I know NGOs don't have to report these metrics as deeply as other organizations, but, you know, it's for the community. I think they should be doing that.
Indeed. So I read the financial report, and a lot of them were motherhood statements that, quite frankly, read as if they'd just been downloaded from a template. You know? So it would say, for instance, you know, that we have conducted training in order to, improve the knowledge of our workforce or something along those lines.
Exactly.
And that was tabled just, you know, and there was no detail as to what training, what improvements in desired behavior that training was intended to create. It was just a motherhood, and again, it was just motherhood statement after motherhood statement, as if, you know, this is not about information.
Yeah, no breakdown of, like, program financials, no breakdown of, like, campaigning financials, no breakdown of any of the sort of details and stuff.
Right. I understand also an annual report was not lodged.
Yes.
An annual report has been lodged since, which I think is a bit odd, but, you know, it's not mandated that an annual report be included as part of an AGM, but it is typical, I believe.
Yeah, it is odd to receive an annual report after the board elections, after sort of the annual general meeting and things. It's not necessarily a, you know, particularly bad thing, but it is an odd thing to do, an odd choice to make, as if all the movers and shakers and decision makers for the organization already knew this information. This was already known to people, but it wasn't disseminated to any of the other members or participants or, you know, anyone else that was involved in the organization, which is just not the attitude that you want from like an NGO that's supposed to look after the community, I suppose. Yeah.
And we're talking one of Victoria's premier LGBTIQA plus advocates and organizations.
Yeah.
So I want to make actually to that point, I want to make absolutely clear, we are not suggesting here at Queering the Air that the views that were reflected in the key speech necessarily are the views of Thorn Harbour Health. And in fact, let's conduct a thought experiment. Let's conduct a thought experiment where, you know, a board for an organization agreed with everything there that was said. That would still not mean that necessarily that the organization feels that way. Plenty of boards have been ousted because their members do not agree with their board. Mm. So it's not even necessarily a reflection of the views of the organization. I do, however, believe that this is a worrying situation from the perspective of a vis-a-vis discussions that Oscar and I had after the Better Together podcast debacle. Ooh. The question isn't, are these people so-and-sos? The question is, are these the people we want to be leading our community?
Yes, I would agree. I think it's a... This discussion, this keynote speech by the speaker and stuff, that taken into account with the podcast debacle and then the Better Together conference and stuff, all that together ties to a worrying trend that it seems that the more elite of this organization, the elite donors, board members and stuff that are, you know, holding these views that don't reflect the views of the organization, because I believe that most members of Thorn Harbour don't agree with these views. But
No. In fact, you know, I rather suspect that the vast majority of members of Thorn Harbour generally, be it board or otherwise membership, may have something to say once they learn of this.
Exactly. And I think that's why it was a very interesting decision to make this AGM very inaccessible to people, very, you know, like undemocratic, very, you know, like lacking in information, lacking in, you know, anything else.
Can I get you to zero in on what we mean by low in democracy? Because, you know, it's important that we're clear, to be fair.
Yeah, holding board elections before the AGM, before the financial report, before all these sort of things, it's not very democratic in a way that you're not giving like the, you know, members of this organization a chance to fully like understand what they're voting for.
In comparison, for instance, I believe that the Switchboard AGM actually conducted the ballot there.
Yes.
Which meant that anybody who was present had an opportunity to vote. Mm-hmm. Whereas in comparison, the Thorn Harbour Health election is by mail ballot. And my understanding is, and this could be wrong because, to be fair, both you and Oscar quite rightly felt the need to leave before the ballot counts were announced. My understanding and Oscar's understanding was that there was no opportunity to vote on site for the Thorn Harbour AGM.
No, it didn't seem like that was the case.
Right, yes.
Yeah,
just want to qualify that unless they did it at the last minute without announcing that somehow that was on the agenda, which would be an odd thing to do.
Yeah, and it was interesting comparing general meetings and stuff with the Switchboard one.
Yeah.
The Switchboard general meeting had it was still small, but it had a broader, membership, like broader, like, base from the community and things at it.
Yeah.
Whereas the... Thorn Harbour one seemed to be very sparse. I was curious if they had quorum, but I think they did have quorum and stuff, but not by much.
This is a bit I edited out. Yeah. There's an hour and 10 minutes we needed to squeeze into 30, but one of the things that Oscar did say that was cut out was that it was around 20 people.
Yeah.
That sounds right?
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah. Another thing, though, I do want to throw in, and again, we didn't have time, but I thought I'd actually instead throw it to yourself, you know. Mm. One of the things that Oscar did also say was that in terms of volunteer members. They were basically the only one there. That's not to say the board members don't also volunteer. So, but apart from that, it was somewhat of a novelty that that volunteers were present, except for one thing. My understanding is that volunteers were used to serve the board members canapes and drinks.
Yes, that was interesting. I think, don't get me wrong, I think Switchboard also was lacking in volunteers there as well.
Right.
But I think there was a lot more online volunteers with Switchboard, whereas there didn't seem to be any for Thorn Harbor and stuff. Yeah, it seemed the only, volunteers that were there were just to, serve everyone else and stuff. Yeah.
And I think that, if somebody had said to me, oh, I'm outraged about what happened at Thorn Harbor Health's AGM, and I said, oh, why? And they go, well, they had the volunteers serving canapes and drinks. I'd go, yeah, so what?
Yeah.
But it does seem to form part of an overall package here, of a mentality. So,
yeah, I would agree with that and stuff. And, just a general, broader community. As I understand, Switchboard and Thorn Harbor both are supposed to represent the broader LGBT community and
correct.
Stuff. You
I
know,
agree.
Everyone in the community from all walks of backgrounds, all, cultures, life, identities, religions, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, hair colours.
Exactly, hair colours.
Can you explain to me, explain to the listeners why I said hair colours?
Yes, there was an interesting moment in the speech with, Ian Keith Hunter, the ALP member from South Australia that was the keynote speaker.
Yes.
Where he was very much scolding the role of activism and the role of, any of that kind of pushing forward of our voice and getting our voice out there and stuff in place of just simply placating people, minimizing yourself, minimizing, what you want and need, trying to get the bare minimum, if that, sometimes less than the bare minimum from his history as he was explaining it and what he's achieved and stuff. He talked so much about moderating and just trying to tamp down on all of that kind of stuff. And one of the interesting comments that he made was, don't be one of these activist queers. Don't be one of these, outspoken, woke,
blue-haired
sort of liberal style, queers or anything else like that. That is not the way that you get things done. That is not the way that we get things done.
Yes.
The way we get things done is through, boring, meetings with ALP members where they minimize what we want and we demand more and then they give us less than half and all this sorts of stuff and
But an attitude of that's just politics, baby.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That's just politics. The activism doesn't get anywhere. That was his big thing. The activism doesn't get anywhere, which was just very odd from an organization like Thorn Harbor and from himself.
Yeah.
Both of them were activists. Organization itself was an activist organization. He himself was an activist and stuff, to be able to turn around and be like, no, don't do that. that wasn't good.
That's what I find so, I also find strange about it because it's historically inaccurate.
Yeah.
The wins and the gains of the queer community were as a result of activism. In fact, there were movements in the 50s and early 60s, that involved, showing that being gay, you could be gay and highly respectable, an upright citizen of the community, and therefore, work in with policy makers and decision makers in order to gain justice. And the whole fact of the matter historically is that that didn't work and it was replaced by activism that did create change, that changed the dial.
Yeah.
And furthermore, again, what's so odd, and I think you've already touched on this a little bit, Anna, that is Thorn Harbor Health's history.
Exactly.
The AIDS Council of Victoria was, it's a bit like saying, the way that housing, community housing, although I've got problems with community housing, but nonetheless, that the way that community housing can change the dial is by, being cozy and chummy with fellow bureaucrats from the housing registry. extra. Mm-hmm. Well, that's historically inaccurate, because if anything, the tragedy of community housing is that many of those organisations actually started as squatters' associations. Mm-hmm. Their history was one of radical resistance.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, of course, the Victorian AIDS Council had, you know, also has a history of working in with government, but that's because of an extraordinary policy shift very quickly in the crisis of the AIDS epidemic, right?
Mm.
That aside, it's been activism.
Exactly.
It's not politics, baby. It's activism, baby.
And just to bring it back to the modern day as well with Thorn Harbour, which I found, like, you know, part of this, again, this adding general worrying trend that they're going towards is that, like, again, to compare it with the Switchboard Annual General Meeting, there was, you know, the keynote speaker was an Aboriginal man who was talking about, you know, the new treaty to Parliament and stuff, and, you know, massive broad changes that are happening, and, you know, focused a lot on the solidarity of the movement and how, you know, we're all tied together, how, you know, you can be Aboriginal, you can be queer, you can be Aboriginal and queer, and we're all in this together. And
so, you know, the communal and political power and solidarity that comes from the contingent realities of intersectionality.
Exactly, yes, and they focused so much on, they're expanding their programs for, you know, queer people of color. They're expanding their programs for Aboriginal people. They're expanding all of these programs and stuff. Thorn Harbour had none of that. Thorn Harbour had nothing to do with that at all. Barely acknowledged, you know, the treaty itself.
To be clear, you mean in terms of what was spoken about at the AGM?
Including in their financial statements too.
Yes.
Like in everything that they went about with it, they didn't seem to have a talk at all about, you know, this intersectionality or the importance of intersectionality, like reaching out to queer communities of color, reaching out to Aboriginal people, reaching out to any of these, you know, other communities.
And again, I want to make a distinction between Thorn Harbour Health, the organization, and the board, because my point here again isn't to trash Thorn Harbour Health. I'm a Thorn Harbour Health volunteer.
Absolutely. Yeah.
We'll see whether I continue to be after this show. I hope to be, because I'd like to think that part of membership and being a citizen is that I can speak out about these things, and we will be approaching Thorn Harbour Health about these matters and hoping to include their response, you know, in a future episode. However, from my perspective, what I'm more concerned about is who is at a governance level leading our organisations and therefore pushing the mainstream political agenda, you know. And if the answer is people who gather together to listen intently to a man that says, you know, you shouldn't be associating yourself too strongly with blue-haired, you know, activist queers, then I want a change in leadership.
Exactly.
Full stop. And I think it's, again, just to touch on it, you know, I will insist till I'm blue in the face that we are facing a real danger here of the whole community, or very much the more vulnerable segments of that community in particular, being sold out again by a growing hegemony of queer professionals.
Yes.
So we can talk about people, whether they're a queer activist. I've had jokes with people about whether they're an activist or an advocate. Mm-hmm. And that's often a good way to rib people in a pub. Oh, you're not really an advocate activist, mate. You're just an advocate. Ha, 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 you know. And I get it back, you know.
Yeah.
It's all good fun. But I think what's even more worrying is this shift from activist or advocate to professional.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where the idea is that you actually do have to behave differently to the broader community in order to drive a mission objective.
Yes, you know? Exactly. It's very much giving off that tone that, like, you know, unfortunately being queer is now a commodity. It's a product that we can sell. It's something that, like, you know, we now have to fit into this specific little box of what is queer, what is gay and stuff, so that we can sell it and make it palatable for politicians, make it palatable for donors, make it palatable for the community as a whole, like the broader Australian community to accept and things. And
unfortunately, in a neoliberal environment, people can say, oh, well, no one's actually selling anything. But in fact, the political arena for ideas in a neoliberal world is a marketplace for ideas.
Exactly.
So it is about packaging policy notions. It is about packaging the notions of who the benefactors are. Mm-hmm. And it is quite clearly based on the very words of Ian Hurd at the AGM of Thorn Harbour Health, no less, about making sure that the packaging of who the benefactors are is something palatable to the broader community.
Exactly. And it just follows this broader trend that's been going on beyond just Australia, but throughout the world and stuff, with things like the CAST report in the UK becoming now the standard, with the UK becoming very transphobic and stuff, and how they approach single sex spaces and all these sorts of, like, you know, different debates and things, with it going on in America too. It seems that, like, yes, it's starting to affect us here in Australia too, that this is now the, you know, not one of those hills that are worth dying on, unfortunately. Very disheartening to hear, you know, whether you're trans, whether you're a queer person of color, whether you're from any marginalized community that is not white, cis, gay.
Well, that's
right. White, cis, lesbian. You know, that's the reality.
Well, Thorn Harbour Health, some of the key work that I've been doing has been going to sex on the premises venues, right? And advocating sexual health information. You know, that if I don't tell people, you know, around a barbecue that that's some of the volunteer work I do, because I know the reaction I'm going to get.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, their modus operandi is the opposite to what was spoken about at the AGM.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know? And so, again, it's not, this is not aimed at Thorn Harbour Health, the organisation, but I do want to dig deeper and find out how it can be that this type of conversation can form part, or not just part of an annual general meeting for this organisation, but be the keynote speech.
Yes.
So this has been Queering the Air with Madison Moffat and also with...
Anna.
And we're being broadcast to you live and direct via 3CR on 855 AM on your radio dial. And we're also at the moment broadcasting through digital radio and also online through 3cr.org.au/streaming. I'm going to leave you now with Oscar the Wilde's track Roll with the Punches. And following that will be the Salaam Radio Show. Now, I sit around at the 3CR offices every Sunday for about an hour, doing a bit of admin here and there for the Queer in the Air show. And it's always a joy to sit there and listen to the absolutely fantastic bangers that I've never heard before, because I'm in my own little Anglo bubble, you know, that are featured on the Salaam Radio Show. So do yourself a favour, as Molly Meldrum used to say. See you next week.